Senator Thomas online, and we expect Senators Olson and Huggins to show up at some time during this meeting. So what we're dealing with today is Senate Bill 14, Act Raising Compulsory School Attendance Age, and Senator Davis's bill. Any comments you have to begin with, Senator Davis?
Actually, what we're going to be dealing with today is the up age for children to stay in school, but we also have put this bill within the bill of the truancy bill. And so we thought this would be a good opportunity to discuss them both. Both of them are very important to me, but we do have a standalone bill, this another bill, that would deal with the upper age from 16 to 18 in case this bill does not move along as fast as we think that it should. I feel pleased that we have done a lot of work on this bill and that I'd like for my staff to really give an overview of it to say exactly what we've done and some of the research that we've found out and how it is working in other states, particularly the truancy officers. We don't have truancy officers in our state anymore. There's only one school district that pays out of their budget for truant officers, and that is Juneau. But there are programs being developed in other states, other districts. They just don't have a truant officer or anybody designated to handle the dropout and the truancy rate. This piece of legislation would be very helpful, and I would like to see it move forward. We have invited the test committee to come in so that they could give their input on this bill. So when we get back to Juneau, we'll be able to move this bill out of the special education committee into one of the other referrals that it has to go to. And so I guess what we need to do is to have my staff, Tom Overmeyer, to give an overview of the bill, and we can move on from there.
Thank you, Senator Davis. And just for the record, Senator Thomas, are you with us?
His staff, Grier Hopkins, is here right now. He'll be right back in just about 20 minutes or so.
Okay, thanks so much. And anytime Senator Thomas has a question or concern, give me the sign here, and we'll make sure he has an opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Senator. I'll let him know.
Okay. Thank you. Well, Tom Overmeyer, pleased to be here. And Tom, you've been working hard on this bill and these bills. Actually, we've got three bills that we've been dealing with on this subject, Senate Bill 10, 14, and Senate Bill 31. Can you, Tom Overmeyer, walk through the additional materials we've got and any changes or thoughts you have on this this legislation?
Yes, sir, Senator Stevens. Tom Overmeyer, for the record, legislative aide is Senator Davis. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 14 is now in what we call the K version, that is a little different from the E version that was originally discussed in the formal hearing on April the 18th in Juneau. There have been some changes that I noted in the letter to you. It might be easier for me in explaining the committee substitute just to go through the sectional analysis briefly, and then to indicate the changes in the K version. And then I'd like to make some additional comments about the research and what's going on in these areas. You did mention that we have combined three areas and three bills, Senate Bill 10 regarding truant officers, Senate Bill 14 for compulsory school age, and Senate Bill 31 regarding truancy and sanctions for truancy. And there have been modifications along the way.
But you're referring to the letter of August 14th, sectional analysis?
Yes, sir. That is the most recent.
All right. Do we all have a copy of that? It's from Senator Davis's office, dated August 14th, and goes through a sectional analysis of the K version. Please go ahead, Tom.
Well, on the first, if you look at the bill itself, the first section, Section 1, raises the school age from 16 to 18 for the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor for repeated absences from school. This portion of the bill is necessary to be changed in format based on the prior legislation. This is nothing that we attempt to do, but we have to change the age It now reads, if being 19 years of age or older, the section itself, the main section that changed it was our subsection of section 1 with subsection 3. It says under 18 instead of 16 to be repeatedly absent from school. This section 1 is a fairly straightforward change to the statute. Section 2 actually raises the compulsory age from 16 to 18, and that's where we changed the language, where every child who is 7 years age or older and under 18 instead of 16 shall attend public school in the district. And there were a couple other changes you'll note in that, but the language very clearly changes it to 18. Section 3 lists the exceptions to compulsory school age under Section 2, and you'll note that, and I'll explain that very briefly in the next section regarding the changes, that the only thing that changed is a person must have either completed 12th grade or graduated from a secondary school.
The exception is
under a subsection 9 was the exception that really is the only one that changed in that portion of the statute.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Section 4 requires each district to implement and develop procedures for the reduction of truancy, including involving community members, establish a review body to consider individual causes and preventative measures, and impose progressive intervention after notice and conferences. So this is a very complex, although it reads very simply, it's the most important part of the bill, because without the cooperation of both the school districts and all the agencies, the social agencies, the police department, the parents particularly, and community organizations to help these children, the system doesn't work just by putting truant officers into place.
So, Tom, have you received reaction from districts and the police departments and that sort of thing on these steps of intervention?
Well, I understand that we do have a program that may be working in North Pole. I have some information on it. But in addition, we've contacted other states, and one state that's been particularly successful in Oregon, it involves only three counties, 12 schools, but they have six off-truant officers, and I can go into that later. But it's very successful because they do an audit of each school. They make sure that they have the parents involved. The parents are notified immediately in person if the child doesn't show up at school. I mean, it's a very effective program. And then they work with bringing kids back into school and bringing them up to speed if they're behind so they don't drop out again. I mean, there's so much that's involved in this. And that program, I think, is worth looking at. And I have all the backup material for you on that. Another program that's called FAST that Richard Benavides picked up some information on, and those people may be listening in, also is a program that takes elementary children up through middle school and involves the parents in training programs. And they take each grade in each school, and they work with them for about 6 weeks on 2.5-hour sessions, so everybody knows what to do when there's a truancy problem. Now, the Section 5 requires the Department of Education and Early Development to employ a specified number of truancy officers, and that is the section that has some questions because the statute itself says that for the state to provide a truancy officer, there must be an ADM, an average daily membership, of 1,000 or more, with the exception of these schools that are correspondents that may have a great number of children involved. And so it doesn't involve that many schools, you'll notice in our districts, but it is very expensive to provide them based on the fiscal note. It's the only fiscal note that's involved at this point.
Can you give us an idea of how many districts have an ADM of 1,000 students, just roughly?
Thirteen. And it has a fiscal note of $1,004,000. It was thought that perhaps the districts, if they had the money, could employ more than one person, perhaps on a part-time basis, or use other ways of dealing with this. And of course, this was based on a geographic locale where it's much more expensive to hire people. But I would mention in the same line that the Oregon model, which I thought was so fascinating, actually pays for it. The program pays for the truancy officers itself, because they base their ADM on an attendance model instead of an enrollment model. We do a picture from October, 20 days in October, and they take a membership on a daily basis. And if these children are not in school and they miss 10 days, they drop them from the rolls. But when they come back, they put them back on the rolls and they count each day that they're there. And the schools are paid for the days that the children are in school. So when they have 6 truancy officers in 12 schools, essentially they find that it's been so successful in getting these kids back into school that actually it pays for the truancy officers. It's something we've never really dealt with because we have a different model on ADL with a picture in October instead of an attendance model. California, I understand, goes on a daily basis by computer somehow. And I haven't even looked at that, but to me it would be amazing with the number of children in California. But it must work.
So within our system that we currently have, it'd be pretty hard to do that, you're saying, Tom, to credit districts for times that the truants are back in school.
I think that with modern computers, I think that we can do anything any other state does. I don't think it's at all difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of changing our financing plan, our budgeting plan, in order to acknowledge what's going on, and everyone would have to be on the same page, and we'd have to use the same type of system throughout the state. But everyone is computerized now, and it's something I think to look at, whether we are on an enrollment model or an attendance model for funding truancy officers.
That's a good thought. Senator Davis?
I just want to say there is somebody from DOE online, isn't it?
Dick Luther is supposed to be online from the department.
You know, they might be able to answer some question having to do with ADM the way we do it. And I don't think it's always been done the way that we're doing now, but we do the mm-hmm. student count in October. That's not to say that it could not be changed. I think it would be worth hearing from the department if there's somebody that could address that, the various models that we've used in the past.
Thank you, Senator. Is there anyone online from the Department of Education?
Yes, my name is Richard Luther, and I am online.
Well, thank you, Dick Luther, glad you're with us. Do you have any response to Tom's thoughts and Senator Davis's comment?
Yes, my only comment would be that right now there is a committee that's looking at the whole funding formula, and if a change were to be made switching from an ADA model from an ADM to an ADA, that group would have to address that, and it would have to be a part of the funding formula. It would be a rather significant change from the way funding is determined now to go to this particular plan.
Well, thank you, Dick. I appreciate those comments. The task force on education met yesterday. We have one day meeting the end of August, and so that was not an issue that was raised and was not an issue addressed. But is there any way to get around this, to credit districts for the times in which truants are back in school, or is that just pretty much impossible with the system we now have?
I would say it's pretty much impossible with the system we have now, because what it would try to do is overlay something else on top of the system that we have now, and I suspect it would become very complicated and cumbersome. It would almost have to, I think it would require changing the way funding is determined and go to an average daily attendance rather than an ADM model.
Right.
But Eddie Jeans would be better able to respond to that, but he isn't here, but I'm pretty sure that he would have the same comment.
Thank you, Mr. Luther. Yes, Senator.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And Dick, thanks for your testimony. While you're online, and we've had previous testimony about fiscal note, too, noting that 13 districts have ADM that would qualify or that would mean we'd need to have a truancy program and a truancy officer. I'm assuming, I look at this, and one of the 13 is Juneau. And the cost for a truancy officer in Juneau right now is, I think, being paid by our school district. Have you talked at all to the Juneau School District to find out what the actual cost of that officer is?
No, we haven't.
Okay, and then a second question, Mr. Luther, with the forbearance of the chair here. I mean, one of the frustrations that I have about fiscal notes is that it talks about the cost of the program. And I'm going to say something, and you can tell me whether or not this niggling notion that I have may or may not be correct. The Department of Education's fiscal note for this shows a cost of about $1 million. And I mean, I look at that, and we see nothing about the potential benefits of a truancy program. Am I wrong to infer that if we have a truancy program, and if a certain percentage, maybe even a small percentage of truant students are helped by this and go on to succeed, that there won't be savings down the road in law enforcement and social services and courts and elsewhere? Is that a bad inference for me to make? I'm somewhat frustrated looking just at the cost and not at the potential benefits.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, I think you're right on with that comment. I think there would be tremendous benefit, especially if the truancy officers did things other than just working, well, you know, addressing the truancy thing. There, we have some initiatives in place that a program, College Ready, Work Ready, if the truancy officer could also work at helping to implement that program, that provides something that would be an incentive for kids to want to be in school. And so I think you're right on. I think there would be tremendous benefits. If we get these kids back in school and they graduate, there's no question that it would pay for itself in the long run.
Thank you, Mr. Ruth.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'd like to address that further also. When we had testimony in Juneau, we did have someone from the Juneau School District to come and give us the amount of money that's been spent on their program, so we do have that on record already. I'm sure that, you know, if they were not getting ready for school and doing the things that they're doing, somebody probably would be online to talk about it, because they're very pleased with the program and it is working for them, and they would be willing to share that model with other districts.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate those comments. Back to you, Tom, if you'd continue, and if you don't mind our interrupting.
No,
if anybody has any questions, just let me know.
Not at all, Senator Stevens. Section 6 provides definitions, and this is the last section, for truancy, essentially, defining truancy for district and truancy. I'm not too sure let me look here what it says. And let me just, if you don't mind, I'd like to refer back to the statute itself. I think there may have been a typo. It does have, district was given the meaning in the statute, so it defines district as having the meaning given in Alaska Statute 14-17-190. But the more important definition that was the main concern and the main difference between this version's version K and version E that was presented in April is that we now have a definition of truancy to mean, in quotes, an unexcused absence from class or school during the school day by a student without the prior knowledge and consent of the student's parent or guardian or the person in charge of the school. Now, those last four or five words was the most recent addition from what we call the M version that was in between this and was incorporated into this last version. So everything that was in E is and M is now in K. And so this definition seemed to be a very important issue for all the members of the committee. And so it has been changed at the recommendation of the committee. So we now have a definition that makes sense. I will mention that in my reviewing other state statutes regarding the definition of truancy, the only thing that the other states seem to use periodically, almost regularly, is that they make reference to the fact that these are children that are subject to compulsory school age. These students, with unexcused absence. I think it's implied and inferred in our statute because we're only talking about students that are subject to school age, and I don't see any reason, in my opinion, to add additional wording regarding that.
Thank you, Tom. Let me make sure that I think what you're saying makes perfectly good sense. You wouldn't find as truant someone who's over 18 or someone who's graduated from high school, right? So that seems to make a lot of sense to the definition you have. Are there any comments on that, concerns? Okay, thank you, Tom. Any other thoughts you have?
Well, I must mention that in the subsection Roman numeral 2 of the August 14th letter regarding the changes in the K version, we've already gone over two of the three changes. The only one that I did not mention was the removal of and elimination of section 2, pages 2 to 4, because the vocational education program in the state facility in Seward has been moved from the Department of Education and Early Development to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So we essentially eliminated two pages of the original draft. It wasn't necessary to reiterate all those words because it's unnecessary.
Well, glad to hear that. makes sense. Thank you, Tom.
And then finally, I'd like to mention, in your handouts today, you should have state notes on ECS on school attendance. The ECS people track all the recent legislation, and we now have, I don't think yours is in color, but this document is from June of 2007, and it indicates that we actually have had a change statewide in, I should say, in the country on the compulsory school age. And we now have, it says, on the upper right-hand side, on a compulsory school age, 16 years of age, there are now 26 states. Last year, there were 28 states, so they have changed that. We have 18 years of age. We have 16 states. We did have 17, but they changed, I think, Colorado from 18 to 17, and I haven't read their statutes to read if they're really trying to deal with 17 or 17 to 18. Sometimes the way it reads, you don't know what year they're dealing with, but there has been a change there for some reason. Nine states are 17 years of age. So essentially what we're looking at is about half the states have age 16, but there has been a growing number over the last 7 years to increase it to 18. And I think that's the significant fact on this entire page, the fact that states are recognizing that students must stay in school in order to graduate. And that the schools with a truancy program and compulsory school age together are going to wind up working with these children to bring them back and help them graduate. There are all kinds of states that are working with remedial programs with what they call graduation plus schools in New York, ages 19 to 21, bring these children back, give them the information they need to graduate. They pass their exit exams. If it's thought that you have to work with these children at the earliest age possible to prevent truancy and then dropout, and of course reduce juvenile crime, but the main import here is to try to help more people graduate. The graduation rate that has not been released yet in written form from the Anchorage School District is 64.9% as of the end of this last school year. That went up one percentage point from the prior years. Now, the national average is over 70%, so we are still behind as a state that spends a great deal of money on education. The one thing I would mention about the Anchorage School District, though, is the fact that if you take just the eight traditional high schools, the graduation rate is about 73.5%. So they really are within the national norm regarding graduation in the traditional high schools, but based on No Child Left Behind and all the other ways they have to calculate these numbers, we are bringing in all of the alternative schools as well that may not have the highest rates.
Well, that's an interesting point, Tom. It depends on what group you include, whether you're just including seniors in high school, or whether you're including kids that drop out in eighth grade, and those are all important figures with finding where the truth lay, is really significant. Senator Allen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Tom, a couple of other questions if we're done with that.
Let's see. Well, I guess the only issue is, I mean, we could graduate every kid we want if we lowered the standards, but we have certain standards and insist that the children meet those standards. So, I mean, on the one hand, I see the negative feelings about a low number of graduates, but on the other hand, those who do graduate have done something quite significant. So no one's suggesting that we lower standards. Everyone's suggesting we keep standards where they are, but try to find ways to bring kids back into the program who dropped out for one reason or another.
Well, yes, Senator Stevens. One point I should make, and it came up in the April hearing with Senator Huggins. He indicated he understood that we had a dropout rate of about 35%. The dropout rate that was explained in documentation as presented to you that I received from the department from Eric Fry indicates that we have an average dropout rate really of about 5.8% in this district, and it's 4 to 6% nationally. So we're not really that far off the line on dropout rates. It's not the inverse of the graduation rate, which would essentially be, 65% passing, 35% failing, dropping out. The dropout rate is a very complicated formula, and it should be recognized that those are the people that were enrolled in the school but have been removed formally from the rolls. The Anchorage School District spends a great deal of time just trying to track people down and where they are. The dropout rate does impact the graduation rate because these people are part of the formula for the graduation rate, as are continuing people that go on afterwards. So there are a number of nuances in this numbering process that we have to be careful to watch. But I still think that based on all the data that we still are below national averages on graduations, and it's a serious problem. Part of it is the truancy and the dropout problem in rural areas as well.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Cotton.
Thanks. One of my questions is a follow-up to the chair's question. Tom, help me out a little bit. I'm going to describe a hypothetical situation. A student does not pass the initial testing of their sophomore year. They suspect that, it's going to be tough for them to pass it, before they graduate and do the graduation or be eligible for graduation. And that person drops out when they reach the age of 17. Are they then taken out of the pool, and that would not affect the graduation rate at a specific high school?
I would have to pull the formula on this again, but the dropouts are deducted. But what they do, the graduation rate, at least based on our formula that follows the national model, is you're required to follow children from 9th grade through 12th grade. All those people are in the mix when they start, and you have to follow them all the way through. If all at once they disappear and you don't know where they went, they're still in your graduation rate, even though they're really not there and they're technically dropouts. But if you have people that have dropped out, you can remove them from that graduation rate. But if they're still in the system, you include them. Now, I don't want to overly simplify this because I may be mistaken on a couple of the pieces of the formula, including the children that continue after they haven't graduated, but they're given time to get their diploma. They go right up to the graduation with their class, and they're handed some type of attendance certificate now instead of getting the diploma, but they're committed to continue for a while to try to get that diploma. These people are in another part of the formula. And I in my office, I actually have the calculation. I worked it out. I was given it, but I worked the numbers to make sure I understood it based on, I think it was the 2005 or 2006 graduation rate. And the school district could clarify this very quickly for you as to how they figure that. But the dropout rate is a very significant number, and it impacts both the EDM as well as the graduation rate.
Okay. Thanks. Another question?
Yes, Chair.
Please go ahead, Sam. In Section 5, on page 5, line 4, it talks about an arrest warrant to bring a person violating AS 143010 before the court for trial and sentencing. I've got a copy of the statute books, and 020 says it's a violation. Can you remind me what the penalties are for a violation?
The truancy officer shall, it says in subsection B on page 5, it reads, the truancy officer shall cooperate with local and state law enforcement agencies and may petition a court competent jurisdiction for an arrest warrant to bring a person violating the compulsory school age statute 143010 before the court for trial and sentencing. We've had this statute on the books for some time. There's always been, there are issues relating to the law, but parents can be considered I don't know, I'm trying to remember the wording, delinquent or I should say failing to protect the child. They use words like this. Are contributing to the delinquency of a minor if you do not keep your child in school. And there's a great deal of flexibility in what goes on with parents and children in the schools, and the schools are working with this on a daily basis. But if they think that a parent is harming the child, and they see this on a regular basis, they can actually go and get some assistance from a district attorney's office, a state officer, a prosecutor, a state prosecutor, not city, to deal with the violations of the state statutes regarding attendance.
I problem understand is, that. I'm more interested in, if there is a trial, I'm more interested in what the sentence can be under this statute.
Usually, and I'd have to look at it, but usually it's a fairly nominal fine. Now, some states, and I've reviewed a little of this, some states actually have, you can actually incarcerate parents for up to 10 days if their children have been out of school and they've done this on a repeat basis. Usually it's up to a $300 fine. I'd have to check and see what it is and which statutes we're relating to here. And I think it may come under the criminal code. And that's fairly clear what the numbers are. And I do believe also there's some discretion on the part of the court as to what the fine may be, and I don't believe there's any incarceration
check and
I would
let us know.
To do that.
That would be helpful. And another question?
Yes, sure.
Please, sir. Because truancy has been combined in the same bill with the mandatory school age, Tom, you may know this, or if Mr. Luther is still on the phone, he may know this. Are the fiscal notes predicated on age for truancy? Are the fiscal notes predicated on students being in school until the age of 18 or until the age of 16? Because I would assume if it's predicated on 16, the fiscal notes would be higher.
Well, the fiscal note should be based on going up through age 18. And I looked at that myself because the only numbers that appear to have changed here are those for the truancy officers, which seem to be a very high number. But there may be, as Senator Davis indicated, maybe it was you that indicated there may be savings if these children are kept in school and they graduate throughout. But if you look at each fiscal note, the first one is on corrections. The Corrections Department, Office of the Commissioner, Administration Operations, Component 694, indicated a zero fiscal note. Passage of this legislation will not have an impact on the Department of Corrections. The second fiscal note relates to teaching and support, and this was the one that involved the truant officers and involved an ADM of more than 1,000, and they estimated $1.4 million in the fiscal note. And that was for 13 districts. The criminal division, under the next section, of the law department, criminal justice litigation, they said that they had a zero fiscal note, and they said
this bill raises the age of, and this is the one you may be referring to, 16 to 18, and amends the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, that was the term I was reaching for, to prohibit a person either 19 or older or under 19 and having the disabilities of a minor removed by the Superior Court to aid, induce, cause, or encourage a child under 18 to be repeatedly absent from the school without just cause. And they said we expect the fiscal impact of this legislation to be minimal. Now, there may be some expense there, but they don't indicate that it's going to be anything outside the normal budget, apparently. It's not anticipated, if we do this program properly, that we're going to have many trials at all, many cases before a court. That is the last resort when you have to take a parent to court for trying to deal with a delinquency problem. We should have been working with the parent and the child with mentors and tutors and whatever is necessary to keep that child in school and bring them up to speed before it becomes something that everyone throws their hands up at. And usually that's what happens with a parent. If the child runs away, can't stay in school, doesn't keep up, and all at once the parent's in trouble with the school district and the prosecutor's office.
Tom, if I can interrupt there, under tab 8, I don't know if you had a chance, Senator, to look at the, there's an article from Education Week dated June 22nd, just on the issue you're talking about, on the second page, it says that, and some of these figures are hard to follow sometimes because you don't really know that if, what I'm saying is if somebody has a high school, is a high school graduate, they will earn more during the lifetime. If they're a high school dropout, they will earn less. And it's hard to know if that really transpires into reality, you know. But it's very interesting. You're talking about crimes and incarceration on the second page there. It says that high school dropouts are far more likely to commit crimes and be incarcerated than those with more education. A 1% increase in the high school completion rate of men ages 20 to 60 would save the United States as much as $1.4 billion a year. I mean, that's all pie-in-the-sky figures, but still, $1.4 billion would be saved if interpretation by Enrico Moretti, an economist, if these kids were to complete high school, they would save $1.4 billion in incarceration fees. It's very interesting, and I question some of those figures, but it talks about the additional earning capacity and the high school dropouts being more likely to be involved in public assistance and those sorts of things. But I think it's pretty fascinating. So,
well, and I would Senator Stevens, I would mention also that the last fiscal note or the next one, legal and advocacy services, Office of Public Advocacy, indicates they also have a zero fiscal note that the legislation again amending the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Well, currently a person can be prosecuted for contributing to the delinquency of a minor under 16. It increases it to 18, and it would raise the compulsory school attendance, but it is not expected, again, to have any fiscal impact on the Office of Public Advocacy. And the final fiscal note for legal and advocacy services of the Public Defender Agency indicated as well that there's a zero fiscal note to raise this age, compulsory age of attendance. So it has been looked at by the various departments, or sub-departments in the Department of Administration and Law and the Administration Department, and they don't see that it's going to cost more to raise the school age, either in terms of dealing in the court system, or in the correction system, as we've changed the school age. And part of the truancy issue that is mentioned across the country is it is supposed to reduce the amount of crime among juveniles who are out on the streets instead of in school.
Thank you, Tom. And your point was that the B on page 5 has been on the books for some time, and this is not a new
right. It's law. It's not new. We've always had these contributing to the delinquency of a minor statutes on the books. The reason most people don't relate it to truancy is because usually it's in another format that they apply that
another type of case that they apply that prima facie case. But it is the one that they relate to truancy. And we really have not had much prosecution in this area because we just haven't had people available to do it, among other things. The people in the rural districts, you may recall, from the April hearing indicated that they would love to go to the Department of Law, to the prosecutor's office, district attorney's office, and get some help in bringing these kids back to school, but they just don't have time for it. They're dealing with domestic violence and other matters with OCS, and they just don't have time to prosecute truancy.
Thank you, Tom. Senator Elton, I think you had some more questions.
That was kind of it. I would just note, Mr. Chair, that you know, in the fiscal notes provided by the Department of Education and Early Development, the reason I asked the question about whether that fiscal note was predicated on the truancy fiscal note dated April 16th, the reason I asked the question on whether it was predicated on the age 6, these costs were predicated on staying at 16, which it is now, or 18, is if you look at the list, and I'll use Delta Greedy because that's maybe the best example, the projected ADM is 883. If they come in at 900, I mean, I guess the question is, are there 100 kids between the age of 16 and 18 that would be coming back into the school, and you know, simply because we raised the age 18? And whether, I mean, that would bump them up then into the need to supply a truancy officer and have a truancy plan.
Did you have a question of the department on this? Did you want a response from
and Mr. Luther might know the answer to that, whether it's predicated on whether they did this kind of based on 16 or 18.
Thank you. Dick Luther, if you're still there, do you have any comments on Senator Elton's question?
Yes, I'm still here, Senator Stevens. And I the answer would be that it's based on the system as it exists now, which would be 17. And I'm not sure that we would have the information of how many students there would be age 18 that would potentially be coming back into it. So the fiscal note is based on the system as it exists now, which is the only information that we would have.
Thanks, Mr. Luther.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, pretty hard to find those figures right now, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Tom, for the comments.
I don't have further comments unless you have questions on the material. This is a very, I think it's fairly straightforward, but it is a fairly complex bill because it does involve three different areas involving schools. And it was determined that we would combine these, and I think we've made modifications that I think have met the questions of the senators involved. I don't know if you recommend any changes at this point, but it reads the way I think that you wanted it. You know, if there were additional changes, you know, we would want to know before, of course, we head back to Juneau. And it's my understanding that this bill cannot be acted on by the HES committee until we go back anyway, because you don't do this in the interim with the special committee. But if there are any changes, you know, I'm open to looking at that. I don't know that there's an effort at this point to separate these bills if you think that it's too complicated to do one or the other. But my main concern about this, to be honest with you, is if we move forward with the program, however we fund the truancy officers, is that we have in place a school system statewide that's able to work with the truancy officers and work with the parents and the schools to bring these kids back in and bring them up to speed, because you can't just throw kids back into class who dropped out and expect them to perform. If they're behind already, and the example has been, you know, if you're behind in math, you're more behind in math. And if you don't bring them up to speed, they're only going to drop out again.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate where we've come with this bill and all the efforts that Senator Davis and yourself have put into this. I really appreciate that tremendous effort. A little beside the point, but I think nonetheless important is that this is an indication of the problems we are going to face in a 90-day session. You know, we've always had a 120-day session originally, recent years. Now we're going to 90 days. And one of the issues that I'm a little concerned about is that we do not have the ability as the Committee on Education during the intern to pass this on to the HES committee. And that's something we might look at when we get back, that in order to efficiently have a 90-day session, we might want to be able to move a piece of legislation during the intern from one committee to another without having to go back into on the floor. So that's something else to be worked out. But I really do appreciate your efforts here, and I really enjoyed the opportunity to read some of the recent publications, Education Weekly, the two articles we have there, and then also the one from the NEA talking about a plan for reducing school dropouts. And just, Senator Davis, one issue that I think is really important is that a suggestion by the NEA that there be partnerships with the university so that if a student has dropped out, maybe there's a way of getting a high school diploma through the university. I'm not sure if that's possible even, but could you earn a high school diploma if you were a type of student who felt underworked in high school and dropped out because of lack of interest? Could you in fact go to a community college or the University of Alaska and work on classes that would allow you to get your high school diploma there? I mean, I don't think we allow that right now. I don't think anybody else other than a school district can give someone a high school diploma, but that's something that I think we might very well look into.
That is an area that we do have to look in, and I've gone to several workshops throughout the past month where other states are coming forward. You know, they're not going just K-12. They're going, first it was K-12, K-16, now K all the way up to 21. So they do the 4 years and then 2 years flat. They pick up the colleges for 2-year colleges, 4-year colleges, and move right along. It's seamless, right across the board. And that's something that we're going to have to look at so that we can provide that for our youngsters.
K-21, wow.
Yeah.
Yes, Senator. I appreciate, Tom, I appreciate your presentation. And if you could just follow up and let me know what the maximum penalties are for a violation. And then another question, and please don't feel like you need to answer it now. What happens if we raise mandatory age to 18? What happens if a student drops out and is and begins pursuing a GED? Is that allowed under this?
I think the school district could answer that because I think they deal with it all the time. And we do have different programs, particularly in the Anchorage School District, to accommodate young people that go to these special programs, including the GED programs. And, you know, I don't know that I have an answer right now. I could check on that. One of the issues is, you know, do you create truants by increasing your compulsory school age? Well, if the kids don't come back to school. But the idea here is if you're working on it properly, you will reduce the numbers that are leaving the school system. You will increase your graduation rate. And in the Oregon model that I described earlier, they have an average, I think, in those three counties of about 38,000 students. They have about graduation rate of about 83%. So the numbers indicate that if you work throughout the system, starting early with assessments and putting a program in place, you will actually increase the graduation rate, and you won't have as much need for these special programs. And I will mention in the same breath that they do have special programs in Oregon as well. They have detention centers and so forth and so on. But those that come out of those centers, they're given education while they're there, and they're worked with individually to give them a diploma when they graduate. So there's been a great deal of effort in that particular area.
You don't need to get back. I mean, but this bill goes to HES.
How do I just speak to that, though?
The bill goes to HES.
Yes, the bill will go to HES, and hopefully as soon as we return in session, it will be
the question that you asked, what would happen to a youngster if he came back into school because the age was increased to 18 rather than 16, it would be in violation, because if we pass the law, unless there's some reason why he should be out of that, and there are ways that parents can keep their children out of school, and all those, we need to speak to that. Yeah, we might increase the age to 18, so everybody has to come to school until they graduate or they reach age 18. Otherwise, they would be in violation. But there are ways that parents can keep their children out of the program as they have for anything else that we have. I think it's 8 or 12 different ways, and I don't know if you have that in your package. You know, parents are always concerned about that, and if they don't meet one of those criteria, they would be in violation.
And that's homeschooling, and that's sort of...
Well, homeschooling would, yeah, they'd be out, yeah.
I just gave the statute book back to Ian, and it articulated, you know, the reasons that it could be.
Yeah.
But one of those reasons wasn't pursuing a GED program.
That's why I say they would be in violation.
And one of the concerns that I have is that I've had the privilege of attending GED graduation ceremonies that are provided, instruction is provided outside of the school district. And it has been an alternative for some students that just haven't been able to make it. But if I understand this correctly, what would happen now if we raise the age to 18, the mandatory, the compulsory school age to 18, what happens is that if somebody's 17, wants to drop out of school and goes into a GED program, they would be considered, I think, in violation of the law as it's written.
Unless they can come out through one of those
other programs, yes, which are not GED.
Yeah.
I see. Well, I wasn't aware of that, but I have great respect for the GED program. I mean, there are many students who I have known over the years who have gone into that program not from a lack of academic ability at all, lifestyle, life problems have gotten in the way, children or whatever, and they pursued their degree or their high school diploma in a different way. So I'm personally very fond of the GED program. It works well.
That's something that we can work on during the time that we have to look at this bill before we go back to session.
Okay, good. We'll do that. All right. Let's see. Mr. Luther, if you're still there, we don't necessarily want to make your life unnecessarily difficult. We wouldn't mind making it necessarily difficult, but not unnecessarily. Do you, speaking for the department, what is your reaction overall to the bill we have in front of us? Is it does it take us forward? Does it take us back? What are your thoughts?
I think that it's one of the tools that we need to have in place.
I'm sorry, we can't hear you, Dick. If you maybe get closer to the microphone and try again.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I think that this is one of the tools that would be in place. I don't think we're going to find that there's any one answer that addresses all the problems, but I think that if this bill were to pass, it certainly has some language that would help. And I think that, you know, there's some concern over the fiscal note, the $1 million, but I think also that those people could be a tremendous help in helping to implement some programs that would really address why kids aren't in school. I think one of the other concerns I have is, and this is something that I've talked to other people in the department and other legislators, one of the ways that parents can escape so-called having their kids in school is the whole homeschooling thing. And sometimes if you put enough pressure on, parents will say, I'm homeschooling my students, and once they do that, we really don't have any oversight at all over what's happening to that kid. So I do have a concern about that particular way that parents can escape, because I'm not necessarily sure that that's helping the kid. But I think overall, I think if this bill were to pass, it would be helpful.
So do you think then, Mr. Luther, that there's some abuse of the current system by parents who are really not homeschooling but saying they're homeschooling in order to get their children out of trouble?
Yes, I do. And one of the reasons I say that is I get a lot of calls from grandparents or other people who are aware of children who are supposedly being homeschooled who aren't receiving any kind of an educational program. So, I think there are some abuses of that. And one of the problems is that we really have no idea of how many kids are really being homeschooled, because parents really don't have to report whether they're homeschooling or not.
Thank you, Mr. Luther. We're only hearing every third word, but actually you're making sense. So, but I appreciate your comments nonetheless, and maybe that's an issue we need to further study. I mean,
I think that's an issue that needs to be taken up by the Department of Education. It has nothing to do with any legislation that we're going to do. And if there's a concern in that area, which I've heard from time to time that there is, but most people that homeschool their children are doing a very good job of it, and so therefore we have not taken any real close look at it, but that's something that the Department of Education needs to address.
I think that's a good point. That's not really germane to this particular piece of legislation, but one that that we certainly should look for, and everyone has great respect for the homeschooling programs we're familiar with, but it is a shame that there is abuse of the system, and maybe in another venue we need to be looking at that. Senator Allen.
Thanks. Mr. Luther, while you're on the phone, I mean, there is another potential effect by raising the compulsory age to 18. I can't remember what the minimum number of students required in a school is now. Is it 12 or?
Is it 10?
Will compulsory education to 18, it would seem to me that we will be bumping some rural areas up to the minimum number they need for a school. Is that a correct impression that I have?
Definitely a possibility that it might do that.
And there would be attendant costs to that.
Yes, if a school that is currently not meeting the minimum number did because of the change, there would be a fiscal impact.
Again, the upside of that would be there would be a school in a community that needs it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Well, that's an interesting point. Thank you. Let's see. Senator Thomas, any questions or comments you have? I appreciate your...
Senator Thomas hasn't returned yet. This is Phil Grier-Hopkins, his staff. One question he had before he left. Let's see. By simply mandating that students stay in school after they have attempted to leave and don't want to be there, isn't it just sort of almost banging our heads against the wall and keeping these students there who don't want to be there? Wouldn't that create a system where they're just allowing to create more trouble in the school? And I don't know exactly how to say it, but it just seems like by mandating that these students stay in school, we're not essentially helping them. We're just keeping them in a situation they don't want to be in and aren't thriving in.
Well, I think you raised a good question. Tom, any response to that?
Yes, Senator Stevens, it's come up many times that if you just raise the school age and you don't do anything in the school district, you're going to have a lot of dysfunctional students in that school who may already have left because they had problems with the school or they have behavior problems, and it may be exacerbated by their being put in a class that may slow down the rest of the class. The answer to it is to, once the system's in place, is to work with these students before they get to that point where they're almost too late to bring back into the school system. And that's the reason some of the other states are using what they call 19 to 21-year-old models of graduation plus schools, as in New York. I think they have four new schools to do this, to bring these young people back in and get them a diploma. They recognize that they're way beyond their age for their achievement level, and they work with them individually, either in these new schools or they bring them back into a mentoring program and some kind of a sub-program within the school district to bring them up to the speed without necessarily throwing them right back into the same classes that they were failing before.
Well, I think you make an excellent point, and I'm sure all educators would agree with you that the idea is to our responsibility in education to find alternative ways to get these young people involved in education, to find ways, maybe vocational programs, maybe through community colleges, and maybe through mentoring. But it's a problem we can't walk away from. It's going to be a major problem for districts to deal with, how to find ways to involve these kids back in education. But we can't just give up on it and not do it because of that.
And through all the research and stuff that we've done, we're finding out that districts are stepping up to the plate.
and making sure that they provide the things that these students need in order to go to school. It's not like they can come into that just because you can go to school till you're 18, or you can just come in and not do anything, or you can disrupt the classes. They have rules and regulations that have to be abided by. And if they don't meet those standards, then you move on to another level. But it's not going to be that they're going to sit there and just disrupt the class and not be dealt with.
Right. Good point. Well, we have Kelly Foreman. Is Kelly here? Or Ms. Foreman, Tom, if you don't mind, we'll have you move over for a second there and ask Kelly to come forward. Kelly is a parent and has some testimony for us. Thank you for being here, Kelly.
Thank you. I am a former public school teacher. I have concerns, as the last gentleman expressed on the telephone, about these children who lack self-motivation and the discipline issues. Is there not a way that we can start working with the students before raising this compulsory age, that we can start some of these programs before we say, okay, everyone has to stay in school until they're 18?
Well, I think there's been attempts to do that. I mean, I know districts have had alternative schools, they call them, and make attempts to find ways to engage these young people. I know it's sort of a chicken and egg question, I guess, really. I mean, do you change the rule to 18 first and then make sure that everyone is complying with the rules, or do you try to get the system as perfect as possible before you change to 18? I think you raised an important question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it.
Right. My concerns rest in the fact that when California raised the upper age limit of attendance, unwilling students were so disruptive that new schools had to be built to handle them and their behavior problems, all at the expense of the taxpayer. And I don't want to see that happen in Alaska. We moved to Alaska a year ago. We loved the state, and I just don't want to see these same problems follow us up here.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, Kelly, but yet you do understand. I mean, as a teacher, I'm sure you appreciate the problems we have with so many dropouts, and what do we do to help these kids? And when you look at all the research that has gone on, it shows that a child that graduates compared to one who doesn't, they earn more money, they're more successful in life, they accomplish more, they stay off the welfare rolls, they stay out of prison.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the research is overwhelmingly states that if you get a high school diploma, if you graduate from high school, you're going to be more successful in life. So, I don't think you're saying let's abandon them.
No, I'm saying let's help motivate them earlier on. Let's not make the program so that these children who are 16 who do not wish to stay in the school program are forced to stay in. Let's think about ways to motivate them earlier on. And can't we do that without raising the compulsory age? When you look across the board at the number of states in the United States that have the compulsory age at 18, it's not like there's a huge trend of everyone jumping on that bandwagon.
Response to that.
I would like for Richard to come up in one of my staffers and talk about some of the things that he's heard from other places that have increased ages up to 18. Might be able to address some of those. But the one thing that I have to say to you, we already have programs in place to deal with those. It's not that we got to sit there and put those programs in place. Each district will come up with the program they think suit them best. But no, we should not have to hold back simply to set schools in place. We already have programs already out there that's dealing with these youngsters already. The thing is, once they get 16, they can go away and don't have to take advantage of the program. If we keep them till they're 18, then they will have to take advantage of the programs that we already have to offer.
Richard Benavides with Senator Davis's office.
For the record, my name is Richard Benavides. I'm staffer to Senator Davis. I didn't know whether you wanted to defer to Senator Elton. I believe he has a question.
Yeah,
he
did.
Just anecdotally, Kelly, the question you're asking is an important question. And anecdotal evidence is not necessarily what we should predicate public policy on. But we have an alternative high school in Juneau in which a lot of students divert themselves. And it's a totally different kind of a high school program. It would be many people from the outside, myself included, before I learned more about the alternative high school, would have said, well, this is a place where troubled, difficult students end up. But it provides an atmosphere in which they can succeed. And the anecdotal part of this is Lori Roberts-Scandling, who is the principal of this school,
is one of the firmest advocates for raising the compulsory age from 16 to 18 because she's dealing with these students, and she sees that as an additional tool for her in helping make these kids succeed. But that's an alternative, perhaps one of the ones the chair was thinking about when talking about alternative programs, so that you're not necessarily mixing all kinds of students into one classroom or programs are being offered that better help some of the students succeed while not disrupting the other more traditional kind of classroom.
So I think you're, Kelly, from your experience, and I have my oldest daughter taught for 5 years in the public schools and had an enormous concern about disruptive students, as I'm sure you did as a teacher. So we can't just throw these children back into a classroom and let them disrupt, you know, the majority of students. We have to find some other solutions. I think that's what you're hearing. Mr. Benavides, any comments you have?
One more time for the record, Richard Benavides, staff to Senator Davis. In my portion of the research for this particular legislation, I contacted over 40 different school districts and organizations that had programs in the schools that dealt with a combination of truancy and also the programs where you're raising the age from 16 to 18. And the overwhelming thing that I learned from them, the comments they gave to me both written and on the phone, is that certainly whenever you are right now, what's occurring is, of course, that we're still, most of the country is still in the old model of going to school between the ages of 5 and 16. And while that was a great thing 25, 30 years ago, it's become pretty obvious with technology and the different things that people have to learn today that there's really not enough time. This is we have statistics, obviously, that I don't have to recant here that discusses how the United States has fallen behind in math and sciences. In accordance with the rest of the world. So what they've discovered is in order to stretch these things out and start kids, let's say, in preschool all the way up to prepping them to go to either a community college or to go into higher academics is that you have to raise those ages in order to keep those kids in school in order for them to be able to get all the information that you're going to get in school now compared to 30 years ago. Any time that you institute a program that raises the age between 16 and 18 or any other age that you have, you're always going to have up to 10 years in some respects of kids that are not going to react positively because if you look at all the successful programs, they all start in the elementary schools. Why? Because the idea is when you catch either a parent or a child who has tendencies for truancy or say, oh, well, my kid doesn't need to go to school or I don't feel well or I don't feel like going to school, if you don't begin the program in the elementary school level where you have to instill those behaviors of it is important for your child to go to school and telling the child it is important for you to stay in school, going up to the middle school level, it is important for you to attend each and every one of your separate classes. By the time they reach the high school area, the kids who are now 14, 15, 16, those behaviors have not been instilled on them. So certainly to be able to come in and say now you're going to stay in school till 18, you're going to have a whole group of people whose behaviors have to be changed. And as we all know, those behaviors are very difficult to change. So the successful programs, some of the things that Tom had talked about, those programs have been begun in the elementary level so that what you've done, for lack of a better term, is trained the parents and the students about the importance of being in school and having some kind of programs to catch them very early if there's some kind of problem, whether it's a social problem, whether it's a problem that has to do educationally for that child and their learning abilities. And at the same time, they're working now more closely with school officials and in some cases even the local law enforcement and the parents themselves so that the programs, as they work their way through the system, by the time those sets of kids who are now in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, by the time they get up to the high school level, that's going to be a learned behavior that they know that here are the things that I have out there that can help me, and here's also the things out there that are, if you will, the stick, the carrot and the stick. So there are programs that have both the ability to take the child to juvenile court. They have both the program's ability to bring the parents to bring them up and understand what everybody has consequences for things that they don't occur. So that's where you're seeing the program's head in that direction. Now, I don't think we're going to
I think the conversation will be totally changed 15 and 20 years from now when these kind of programs will be the norm as opposed to the exception as to what is occurring now. And so anytime you start a program, it's just like the standards-based education. You start that program. If you don't start it in kindergarten and let everybody just go on the way they were, you're always going to have people who are not going to be able to coincide with that program just because the learned behaviors are already instilled in those people. And that's the thing that I learned the most about the successful programs as opposed to all the problems having to open special schools, because you have to take care of the people who aren't necessarily trained in that mindset for going to school.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate your comments. And Kelly, I appreciate your cautionary comments, too. I think you're right that we have to be cautious about moving ahead with new programs, that, in fact, things may happen that we're not aware of, and it may cause difficult problems for us. But I think Richard's comments that this is not, the answer is not going to happen overnight. It'll be a long-term process, and we may be looking another decade here before we see all of the results of this. But I still think that Senator Davis has a good idea here, and that it eventually will lead to a better educational system than we now have. Any further comments you have? Well, thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate you coming out and commenting and talking to us. We've had several people who are listening and not have no intention to speak necessarily, but I might go ahead and ask Tony Newman with the Juvenile Justice Division if there's anything that's come up that that strikes you as important, significant, or something you'd like to comment on, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Senator. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Tony Newman at the Division of Juvenile Justice. Just listening in, as all of you have referenced, school dropping out and truancy are contributing factors to delinquency in and of themselves. And so we're just following this bill and the conversation. It's been a really good conversation today. And just echo what Mr. Obermeier said. We also recognize that addressing truancy and dropping out, it has to be a comprehensive approach. Like him, we've looked into the research on this, and that when raising the compulsory school age is an approach. It's recognized that it is effective when it's part of a overall strategy that provides alternatives for those older students. That involves partnerships between the public and private sectors, and involves getting adults involved in the lives of those young people. So I think it's a great conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Senator Ellis? I'm sorry, Senator Elton.
Thanks, Tony. And as long as you've got a mic there, on the truancy part, the bill gives truancy officers the ability to take a person, and in this case they're talking about the person being a parent or a legal guardian or somebody otherwise charged with the care of the child, to court for having a truant child. Does this implicate in any way, do you know if this implicates in any way a foster parent or child protective services? I mean, they could be defined as person of a person who is in charge of the child or responsible for the child?
I think that's an excellent question, and I know that an OCS representative had wanted to be here today in case a question like that came up. I could take that question to OCS. I'm not sure of the answer myself.
Okay, that would be helpful, and maybe you could get it to the chair and he could just distribute it to the
certainly
the rest of the
room. Okay, thank you. Senator Olson, good to see you. Thanks for being here. We've had a wide-ranging discussion, and if you have any comments or thoughts, make sure to let us know. We've had several people who have been on listen only, and want to give them everybody an opportunity to speak if they change their mind. Is there anybody who's been listening that would like to make a comment? Okay, well, thank you all for being with us. The intention, of course, is that we move this bill onto HES committee as soon as we return into regular session. So That will occur in January, and we'll get that over to your committee, Senator Davis. Any other comments that need to come before us at this time?
Just thanks to the sponsor of the bill. I think it's an important bill.
A very important bill, and I think we acknowledge that this is not the silver bullet's going to solve all problems, but it's a very important step along the way, and can make an important difference. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Tom, for your comments. We are adjourned.